You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Opening a year-end White House news conference, the president also cited ongoing progress and signups for Obamacare. He also cheered the Iran nuclear deal and progress in normalization of relations with Cuba. Meantime, Obama commended Congress for passing a sweeping transportation funding bill. This is USA Radio News. I'm Melody Burkett.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
States want consumers to be wary of scams this holiday season. Jonathan Harris with the Department of Consumer Protection says it's more important this time of year to slow down and read over all the details while doing your shopping.
You know the entity that you're working with as good as possible. So if someone solicits you through the email, make sure that you don't do anything right there. Go directly to the source if it sounds good.
Harris says to never give any money or personal information up front, no matter how good a deal sounds. Hundreds of retailers are offering free shipping and promising delivery by Christmas if you buy online today. It's the 8th annual Free Shipping Day. More than 1,000 retailers are in on the deal this year. They include giants Walmart and Target, high-end retailers like Nordstrom, Neiman Marcus, and Saks Fifth Avenue, and hundreds of small and specialty sellers. Some are offering discounts on orders along with free shipping. You can check out the deals at freeshippingday.com. Some cops in rural Georgia are spreading a little holiday cheer by handing out $100 bills instead of tickets. Sheriff's deputies in Monroe County plan to give out more than $5,000 provided by an anonymous donor. Officers patrolling the small community about 60 miles south of Atlanta are on the lookout for drivers who look like they could use the money. The local sheriff says it's a good way to give back to the community and make everyone feel good about law enforcement during the Christmas season. We're on the web at westernjournalism.com. I'm Melody Burkett.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Good afternoon. You want to hear the weather? Maybe not. It's not what we've been used to. Of course, it is December 18th today, and I have to tell you, there may be some snow flurries tonight, chance at least, and the temperature could be down to about 29 degrees, and so there are some possible snow flurries after 2 a.m. However, mostly it's going to be cloudy. Tomorrow, Saturday, partly sunny, then mostly sunny and breezy, high of around 40 degrees. So that's pretty cold compared to what it's been. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, low of about 21 degrees. Then on Sunday, best day, Sunday is sunny and high of about 43 degrees. And then by Monday, we may be up to about 52 degrees, but mostly cloudy. And the extended forecast, looks like we may have a very nice Christmas, although there is a chance of showers. But the high could be about 63 degrees. So, unfortunately, precipitation is about 50%. So, looks like we may have some rain on Christmas. I'm Pat Smith. The program, It's the Law, if it's 4 o'clock on Friday. And hopefully I will be able to stay awake today. So I thought we'd talk about some of the headlines and also a couple tax tips at the end of the year. Those of you who know me know that I am not a tax attorney. I am a family law attorney. But there are a couple things that I think business owners should understand, especially if you're employing your family members, and most specifically a spouse. Because I have seen two or three situations recently where people who've owned businesses are getting divorced and they're older. And the wife, although she's worked in the business for many years, was never paid. And what that means is she was never on the books as an employee, so that no federal or state taxes were withheld, and no Social Security and Medicare taxes. Now, the thought for most people is, well, as an employer, I have to match the Social Security and the Medicare. And it's certainly not going to be necessary because my wife and I are married, and you know, I'll get Social Security and I'll have other retirement benefits. But what happens is that the wife's Social Security, if she doesn't qualify for her own, is only going to be half what the husband's Social Security is. And I'm using husband and wife traditionally. And the problem is that in the end, for most people, they will get back much more in Social Security than they pay into the program, and much more than even the employer and employee pays into the program. So Social Security is, in some ways, everyone should try to maximize it. I know that sounds strange, and I know people say that Social Security is going to run out of money, but it really is something that employers and families should really think about, because if they take a look at the long run and talk to the financial advisor, because the financial advisor will be able to show you what the difference would be. I'm representing someone who actually did not pay Social Security, worked in the business for many, many years, and her Social Security is now a pittance of what it otherwise would have been. And I really mean that. It's less than 25% of what it would have been had she had the business been paying in, and if she had been paying in over the years she worked. And of course, as we know, or most people know, that you have to be in the Social Security system for 40 quarters in order to be able to get Social Security. But the other thing we have to realize, and people should think about, is disability. Because again, Social Security disability, you have to be eligible to obtain Social Security disability. And there's a real misunderstanding between Social Security disability and SSI. So what I would call SSD, some people call SSA, is Social Security disability based on a person's earning history. And SSI is for people who are disabled who do not qualify for Social Security disability because they have not worked enough quarters. And so this is important because there are young people who in fact become disabled, and they're going to get substantially more in benefits if they're on SSD. At least that's been my experience. Anyone should also really check in with Social Security if they have any questions about this. But another tax tidbit, and this comes from Andy Ross, who we all know is a CPA at Bernard Kowicki. But Andy's tidbit is for employers, and that is, if you're going to hire someone and you need some additional staffing, you either hire an employee or an independent contractor. Now, of course, the difference is that most of us would probably prefer to hire an independent contractor because we're not then required to match the Social Security and the Medicare and the, pay a lot in for our employees. Not pay them, but pay the federal government. However, the independent contractor, it also makes it easy because all the employer needs to do is report the amount paid during the year to the IRS. So we don't have to have the regular paychecks. We don't have to take money out. We don't have to do all of the regular filing. So from that standpoint, obviously, it is much easier for a small employer to have an independent contractor. So businesses obviously want to classify as many of the workers as they can as independent contractors. However, there is a real penalty if the IRS determines that an employer has misclassified workers as independent contractors. And then the IRS will reclassify the workers as the employees. And of course, not only will they assess the applicable payroll taxes, they will also generate assessments of penalties and interest for late filing and payment of employment taxes. So this is not something that someone should do. Most people, are going to be employees, not independent contractors. Now, some businesses, and if you think that because somebody only works part-time or for a short duration, they're an independent contractor, that's not the way the IRS views it. In other words, the IRS regs basically say that if the employer has the right to direct and control how the worker performs the task and has the right to control the business aspects of the worker's job, that person is an employee. Also, if the worker is paid on a regular, periodic basis, rather than when the job is finished, that worker is probably also an employee. And so the permanency of the working relationship is also very important. If the business intends to employ the worker for an indefinite period, they are most likely an employee. So recently, I don't know if anyone has heard this, but recently the Uber drivers, there was that issue, and California determined that Uber drivers were employees rather than independent contractors. And they made that determination because Uber had provided smartphones to their drivers, monitored their approval ratings by customers, and deactivated their accounts for unsatisfactory performance. Now, in New York and Texas, and I believe also Georgia, they've agreed that the drivers were independent contractors. So what this boils down to is there's really no specific test as to whether a particular worker is an employee or an independent contractor. However, if you have a situation where a worker could be legitimately classified as either an independent contractor or an employee, you can apply to the IRS for a private letter ruling. So that, you know, most people, frankly, are not going to do. And also, however, state regulations regarding the classification of independent contractors is often more stringent than tests under the federal standards. So this is something that any employer, any small business who intends on hiring people really should look into. And again, thanks to Andy Ross for this information. And again, as I said, people who are employing their spouses in their business should really look to see whether it makes sense in the long run to hire them as an employee and pay the Social Security and other taxes. And that way, both people will be guaranteed the best possible Social Security benefits in the future. And of course, in my situation, the cases that I deal with, I'm dealing with divorce. And, you know, I have seen, for example, recently where the husband is getting about $1,900 a month in Social Security, which is not the highest, but it's still substantially more than the wife, who's only going to get about $600, close to $700. And of course, hers is decreased even further because her husband convinced her to start taking Social Security when she was 62. That's another thing that people really need to look into, because if you wait till full Social Security age, which is now 66 years old, you can, at that point, collect your full benefit and also collect whatever wages. And if your wages continue after age 66, your Social Security benefits will also increase. So we'll be back in just a minute. I want to tell you a couple things about who's sponsoring today.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days.
That's not the kind of ad we need before Christmas. I think we'll play this one after Christmas, because most of us are not looking to lose weight at this time. At least we're not going to, so it'll just make us feel guilty.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Hey, I want to say that Crown Trophy, one of our sponsors, really does great work. I recently went to a Devils Blackhawks game, and of course I didn't have an old Blackhawks jersey, and I went in and they made me a great shirt. It really looked terrific and had Bobby Hull's number and name on the back of the shirt. And so if you need something like that, they can do much more than trophies. And they're great sponsors of our program. So let me tell you who else is sponsoring, and then we'll get back to some information about legal news. Gee, can't find this.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com. At the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with...
Well, good morning, Hunterdon, and good afternoon, Hunterdon, and Friday, can you believe a week from today is Christmas? So, Merry Christmas to everyone who celebrates, and everybody out there is probably getting a little stressed. The traffic was even heavier today than usual. But what's happening in the legal news? Generally, this is a fairly light time of the year, although the judges are still working and working diligently to get everything done. The courts are closed the last week of the year so that anybody who needs a divorce and needs it quickly has to do it by the 24th, and believe me, will be in court with some people. And frankly, I talked a little bit earlier about taxes. That's one of the other things that a lot of people at the end of the year, what I always have my clients do is look to see whether or not it makes more sense for them to file joint taxes for the year, and meaning that they stay divorced until early January, or whether it makes more sense for them to file separate tax returns and then we rush them in the last couple days of December, assuming we have everything settled, so that we do a lot of tax planning in connection with divorce cases. And one of the things that we find, of course, is it's very difficult for people, most people, to live and try to maintain a lifestyle that they've lived together when they're divorced. But certainly there's some tax planning that can go on and should go on. So what else is news? Well, here's a lawyer who is not very happy. He was found to have exerted undue influence over his mother, and he was required to reimburse his mother's estate for the legal fees and costs stemming from a suit over the way he handled his mother's finances. And this was a ruling by the appellate division. We could certainly, when we'll get John Manfreda in one day, we'll ask him about that case, because that's the type of cases that John handles and handles well. So apparently the trial judge's recent decision allowed an Atlanta County municipality to make its case against the federal government's breach replenishment plan. And apparently it at least shows that the condemning authorities are not infallible. And that's been a real concern for private citizens when their property is taken over. And of course, it can be escheated to the state under certain conditions, and probably the case that is at least some of the older Hunterdon County residents remember is when the entire Round Valley property of all of the homeowners were taken, property was taken, was escheated to the state, and they had to leave. Some of them actually moved their homes, but they had to leave that beautiful valley, which is today Round Valley Reservoir. And the purpose at the time was to supply water to North Jersey. And that hasn't happened. And of course, today it's the beautiful reservoir Round Valley, a great recreation area, great for boating, great for hiking. It is really a very pleasant place enjoyed by many, many people. But certainly the families who were dislocated, I'm sure, really resented what was happening. And, of course, the reason it happened to supply water was never, never happened. But any event, this is still, of course, going on. And the issue is whether or not the federal government can, or the state government, or the city government, what are the boundaries, if any, if they're trying to condemn land. So good news for lawyers and litigants is that there were now, our governor has nominated, and the New Jersey Senate confirmed 10 nominations of trial judges to the Superior Court and 2 judges to the Workmen's Compensation Court, and also approved 4 sitting judges for tenure. Well, what does that mean? In New Jersey, anyone, I guess we all do know or should know, that our judges are not elected, and thank goodness we have the best system where the judges are in fact nominated by the governor and approved and confirmed by the Senate. And there's a process. The Bar Association is involved in that process. Most of the governors have, in fact, followed the New Jersey Bar Association's recommendations as to whether someone is qualified or not. There have been a few exceptions. And what also is supposed to happen is that there is a balance where there's a Democratic appointment and then a Republican appointment, so that there's supposed to be balance throughout the state. And the system really works well. I mean, we have excellent judges here in New Jersey. I think that some of the really good judges have been retiring and taking retirement because they're concerned about some of the things that are going on with respect to pensions and medical benefits. But I was pleased to see, extremely pleased to see, that there have been 10 nominations. Here in Hunterdon County, we have only one judge who is handling all of the family matters. And what happens now is that there's absolutely no way that one judge can handle everything. So that some motions in some of the family cases, for example, are being sent to Warren County. So that means that clients here in Hunterdon County have to go to Warren County for motions, and yet they come back here to Hunterdon County for other aspects of the case. It really doesn't work well, and it overburdens our judges in Warren County. So we need more judges. We need at least one more judge in Hunterdon County. There is going to be a new judge in Somerset County, which is good news. But we certainly need another judge in the family part here. And I'm not sure if criminal is backed up or if civil is backed up, but family really is. And there's so many motions. There's so much a judge has to do in the handling the family matters that anybody who knows anyone who can, you know, spur on the powers to be to, you know, get another judge nominated quickly would be really appreciated by everyone who has to come into the court system. So anyway, that was good news that there are going to be 10 new judges. Now, there was a, what else? Criminal law case that was approved for publication, and that means that it can be used as precedent and cited by the judges in their decisions and by lawyers. And what this was, the actually, this was a Supreme Court decision, not an appellate division decision. The case is State versus Pierre, and what the Supreme Court, Justice Patterson, what they ruled is that by virtue of the combined errors of the defendant's trial attorney, his constitutional rights were denied, and he was denied what is a constitutional right to the effective assistance of counsel. And this is a Sixth Amendment right, the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution, Article 1, Paragraph 10 of the New Jersey Constitution also provides this kind of protection, and therefore the defendant is entitled to a new trial, so that if someone is going to jail, if they're facing jail, they have a right to an attorney. Now, people get this mixed up and they think, for example, they have a right to an attorney in a civil case. That's not true. In a family case, that's not true. So that it's just in criminal cases where someone is facing jail, because of our Sixth Amendment, everyone has a right to be represented. So they have the right to be represented by an effective attorney. So there's another published opinion by, and this is about public records. And this, there is a Open Public Records Act called OPRA. And if you're interested, that's found at NJSA 47:1A-1-13. And that is requires the custodian of records to have attempted to reach an agreement before denying a request. And so that the custodian of records must attempt, as I said, to reach a reasonable solution with the person who's requesting the records. And then, when the request for records would substantially disrupt agency operations, that would not be considered reasonable. And in the case, the journalist who was looking for records, if they wanted records of the governor and unspecified members of his senior staff's third-party funded travel. So what they were looking for is for Governor Christie, or this journalist was looking for Governor Christie and some members of his senior staff to find out who were funding their travel. So third-party travel, I know I certainly would be interested in finding out who funded his travel to Texas for the game, the Dallas game that he was at. And interestingly, most people don't realize he was also at the Cowboy-Packer game in Green Bay in Lambeau. And apparently, everyone in Green Bay, or the people who were in the know, said that they would not allow him to be photographed. At that point, they would not allow that. So in any event, this journalist is trying to find out who's funding this kind of travel. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on what you think, he was not. The court found that this request and this statute does not include a scenario where research and information, not records, are sought. So this journalist was not seeking records, but rather he was seeking research and information. So that didn't work out. There was another case, although it was not approved for publication, that two people, after their business relationship soured, there was the plaintiff in that case filed a declaration of his ownership interest in this business. The business operated a gym, and the court found that he was a 50% member of the company and that his financial interest in the company was 72%. So then the court ordered that all net proceeds from the sale, and this was a gym, sale of the gym to a third party were to be divided 72% to the plaintiff and 28% to the defendant. And then later, the plaintiff moved to be relieved from that judgment because he said the defendant had committed a fraud on him and on the court by falsely representing that 100% of the gym had been sold, and when in fact only 50% had been sold and the defendant had retained a 50% interest. So that the trial court denied this motion, and then he appealed, and the appellate division, seems a little strange on the face of it, but the appellate division affirmed the trial judge, and the appellate division found that the plaintiff failed to provide any convincing argument indicating that the trial judge abused his discretion in denying the motion for relief from judgment. And that's really the criteria that they use. So it's very hard to win an appeal, and people don't realize that they're not, meaning the appellate judges, are not going to just look at everything again and make a decision. They really are looking to see whether or not the trial judge abused his discretion in whatever his ruling was. So no one should go to court thinking that they're going to, you know, even if they lose at the trial court, that they'll win on appeal. Because in this case, which seemed pretty compelling, the appellate division found that the judge correctly concluded that emails, and there were emails back and forth about this, did not constitute clear and convincing evidence of fraud. And that's what he was alleging. He was alleging fraud because the other partner still ended up with 50% interest in the gym. And so obviously that sounds very strange, but in fact, the person who brought that second case would have had to show by clear and convincing evidence that there was fraud and wasn't able to do that. Okay, well, we'll be back shortly after a little news break and talk about some more of the news, current news.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Honorton County.
Honorton Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered...
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you.
Well, we're back, and the program It's the Law. I'm just talking about some of the legal news and what's happening out there as far as... Some of the cases, some of the things that have been approved for publication and not. As I said, there have not been a number, there have not been many cases for published recently, but there have been a few. And there was one, the Division of Child Protection and Permanency, and remember, this is what we used to call DIFAS, D-Y-F-S, and now they're called the Division of Child Protection and Permanency. And this was a case where the family court had the authority to determine that the child's best interests were served by his continued placement with a relative not licensed as a resource family parent under the act. and the family part judge, this is the courts that I'm in always, the deals with all of the family matters, but the court did not have the authority to compel the division to pay financial assistance under the act to a relative who was not licensed as a resource family parent. Accordingly, the appellate division's judgment is affirmed as to those determinations. Now, this is a Supreme Court case. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court in New Jersey. So that the Supreme Court said that the appellate division's judgment is affirmed as to those determinations. And then because the division returned the little boy, Tommy, to the care and custody of his mother, the fact that the appellate division remanded the case to the family part was dismissed. So what happens often, especially in family law cases, is that even though you may think you win at the appellate division, what the appellate courts do is they send the case back to the trial courts for some determination based on their decision. So it means you have to go back to the trial court, and the clients have more expense to go back to the trial court. In this case, by the time the case got up to the Supreme Court for a decision, the boy was back living with his mother. He was no longer with these relatives. So the Supreme Court did not hold that the entire case was moot, but just the fact that nothing had to be sent back to the trial court, because that part of it was moot. So there was a criminal case that was reported, and there was, in that case, the defendant, this was a case where on the appellate division, Judge Manahan, who was a long-term judge in Morris County, is now sitting on the appellate division. The defendant was arrested during an undercover drug operation and charged on a warrant with possession of a CDS with intent to distribute on or near school property. And that is a huge problem because the penalties are much more severe. He was also charged on a summons with a disorderly person's offense, and that was possession of marijuana. After the defendant was indicted, he appeared in municipal court without an attorney. He appeared via video conference because he was incarcerated at that time for a family matter. This guy either, you know, doesn't get it or can't catch a break. So in any event, the disorderly person's drug offense was not joined with the indictable offense, which was pending at that time. So without the presence or participation of the state, but in accord with existing what the judge in municipal court said was practice, the judge amended the offense in the municipal court to loitering and then took a plea from the defendant. And then predicated on his plea, the defendant sought to bar the prosecution of the indictable charge. And the court held that the subsequent prosecution and conviction on the indictable charge was barred under the same evidence test, which is still recognized under state constitutional principles. So the court reasoned that the fundamental fairness doctrine did not apply. So notwithstanding the state's failure to join the disorderly person's offense with the indictable charges, the defendant's reasonable expectation is that his plea to the disorderly offense charge resolved all issues which arose out of his arrest. So, you know, this is a case for everybody to read. And because the same evidence test is still recognized under the state constitution, and fundamental fairness, you know, did not apply, notwithstanding the state's failure to join the disorderly offense with the indictable charges. So they found that the defendant's reasonable expectation that his plea to the disorderly offense charge resolved all issues which arose out of his arrest. I'm going to read that entire case because that is, to an attorney, rather interesting, because I think that probably could have been decided either way. Now, you know, talk about people will take anything to court. Here's one. There was a case where the issue was whether the child of divorced parents may choose to call a step-parent mom or dad, and the court ruled that the child can make that decision, provided the child is old enough and mature enough to make that type of decision. So believe me, in the family part, we find people would litigate anything and everything. So obviously this was a case where the child, and the issue will always be where their child is being coerced in doing that. And, you know, but obviously one parent was really disgruntled as to the child calling a step-parent mom or dad. And I've seen the same thing where kids will say they're brothers and sisters when they're really step-brothers and step-sisters. But it gets to a level of really foolishness if we expect kids to always refer to step-brothers and step-sisters as, you know, step-brothers and step-sisters rather than brothers and sisters. Same thing with half-brothers and half-sisters. I mean, come on already. We have such diversity. We have so many different family types. You know, let's not get hung up over those things. And I certainly understand where a mom or a dad really get upset if their child is calling a step-parent mom or dad. But these are not the kinds of things that are going to be handled well in the court system. And now, you know, and as I said, talk about some people will take an appeal on anything. Here's another one. In this case, the appellate division had to address whether, and the plaintiff's only argument on appeal was that the trial judge included dictum in his written opinion, dismissing the plaintiff's complaint. And at that point, the plaintiff asked to redact the dictum from the judge's decision. And the appellate division concluded that a party may not parse through an opinion of a trial judge and take an appeal from words, sentences, or sections of the opinion that he or she finds objectionable, especially when the party is not asserting that the order or judgment was made in error. So that the only problem here with the plaintiff is not the way the judge ruled, but that he included certain other, what we call dictum, which would not have to be followed, but, you know, makes sense to the judge to include some information. And so in any event, the appeals are taken from actions of trial court and not from the trial court's rationale. And certainly not from dicta. So the appellate division dismissed that appeal for want of jurisdiction. But this is, as I said, people will, you know, litigate and then appeal if they have enough money. Some people will. Most people realize that it does make sense to reach a reasonable settlement. So that, let's see what else is happening here that might be of interest. There was another constitutional question. This was the Third Circuit, which is the federal courts, the appellate court in the federal system. And there was actually, there was a majority and there was a partial dissent. But the case here was a landside marine terminal operator whose primary business was stevedoring and berthing vessels at the terminal, at least from the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. And this terminal appealed from the dismissal of its action challenging the container throughput rental it had to pay pursuant to a lease. And so this, they alleged that it violated the United States Constitution's tonnage clause. And I guess most people didn't even realize there was a tonnage clause. But anyway, That prohibits states from laying any duty of tonnage without consent of Congress, as well as related federal statutes. So anyway, the Third Circuit affirmed, finding that the tonnage clause applied to taxes on vessels, etc., etc., etc. So there are all kinds of constitutional cases that are brought, and some of them make more sense than others. But that is the almost the last thing I'm going to talk about today. But again, as I said, if your child decides to call stepmom or stepdad, dad or mom, don't bother taking it to court because you will probably lose. Now, there was my friend Bill Wolfson has come in early. So, Bill, anything happening in the bankruptcy arena that is of interest?
Well, you probably don't want to hear all of our boring new forms. We have new local forms and new national forms, and they're getting ready for a national Chapter 13 form, although I hear that that might just die on the vine. But the last thing the public cares about in this world are forms that lawyers have to deal with. Isn't that right?
I think you're right, although I understand now that there are also lots of new forms and regulations as far as real estate closings.
They have come into effect, and I'm facing a real estate closing that I'm going to have to do for one of my staff probably sometime in February. And, you know, I do about two or three real estate closings a year, and I'm going to have to figure out what to do. Otherwise, I'm afraid she's going to quit.
Well, I have to tell you, on that one, I think I might pay someone that I know, another good lawyer, to do it, because unless you have a paralegal handling these things, I don't do real estate closings because they are just getting so complicated. In fact, realtors have to be really sharp in order to get these through. I know I've talked to Rich Reynolds at Cortez and Hay. They do a lot of the title work, and they're getting up to speed. I think they, in fact, are up to speed, but there are all kinds of regulations now that have gone into effect for every closing that are going to make them even more complicated.
That's true, Pat, and I will be attending a seminar. 9 out of 10 of my real estate transactions are bankruptcy or insolvency impacted, so usually it's pursuant to an order of the bankruptcy court, or it's because it's a short sale, or it's a deed in lieu. But very often, I have represented people who have been in the business of buying distressed real estate, and I'm going to have to learn all over again how to deal with residential real estate. So I'll be taking a seminar early in January once these rules kick in. And
it'll be interesting to see who, in fact, thinks that they'll be able to teach the seminars, because I think a lot of people now are just learning all of these new regulations.
Well, you know, when you have these sea changes in the law that are pretty wholesale, I think it's a little bit like having a baby. First you learn how to, you know, crawl or roll over, and then you learn how to crawl, and then you learn how to get up on your 2 feet, and then you learn how to walk, and then you learn how to run. And it takes about 2 or 3 years, and probably...
Yeah, but they have somebody that they can watch doing these things where, you know, honestly... and I'm glad that people like Rich Reynolds at Cortez and Hay are spending that much time, you know, getting themselves up to speed. Apparently, all of the programs, the computer guys must be loving it, because they have to put together all of these new programs that can handle these things. It is true that the law is always changing, and I think people don't recognize that.
No, there's certain, you know, immutable truths in the law, like don't commit murder, don't steal, don't lie, don't cheat, don't hide assets from your bankruptcy trustee or your creditors. But, you know, for those of us who practice in the law every day, somebody's always moving our cheese. You know, I always like that book. And so sometimes a judge makes a decision and it ends up being reported, which means it's law that becomes precedental. And You can rely on it. You can
until it gets changed.
Until it's changed again. So,
but I think what often happens, Bill, and certainly people that know me know that I handle family law. But what happens is, in every case, it's so in family law. It really is so fact sensitive. In other words, you can have two cases that may seem similar, but in fact, when you look back at the facts of the case, they're not. So that it's people who, you know, kind of get a little hint of, oh, they think they know, and so often they really don't, because something, they'll pull something out of a case and say, see, this is the law. And frankly, it's the law if you have the facts that were in that particular case, and that's it.
That's true. I often compare practicing law to walking on the beach up to your knees where there's an undertow. You never know when a wave's going to knock you down or the sand's going to get sucked out from under your feet and you're going to fall on your face. Because that's the nature
like
of it.
That. I don't think I like that analogy.
Well, I like being at the ocean, so that's one of the things.
Yeah,
that
well,
comes
I don't
to
want
mind.
I don't want the sand sucked out from under my feet. But honestly, I hear this all the time from people. Well, there's, you know, why can't you just give me an answer, yes or no? And that's usually because there really is no yes or no. It can depend on the facts of the case. Frankly, it can depend on the judge. I mean, certain judges will interpret things much differently than other judges, and so that there really are very few things that are that black and white in the law. Now, one of the things that I will say is that, people need to really look at contracts they sign, because that is one thing that if a contract is clear and you sign it, you're going to be held to that.
Remember, judges don't get any choice. They have to enforce the contract as it's written. So
right.
Even if the judge thinks, gee, this guy made a bad deal, or what was this gal thinking when she signed it, there's not much they can do about
right.
it. I handle contract cases and commercial litigation, and I can tell you that there are times where very sharp, very intelligent people make that mistake, or it was a good idea at the time, but circumstances change with whoever they were doing business with, and all of a sudden it blows up in their face. Or you're working with somebody because you want to get some work, and so you say, we'll figure out the price as we go along. And to me, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, of course it is. And of course, anyone now who's handling any kind of work, any contractor, anyone doing any kind of work, you absolutely have to have things in writing. But the other thing, so often, and I have a case right now, and I really feel badly about how this happened. And I had a young man who came to me and said, well, we've gone to mediation, and we have everything resolved, and so can I bring you the memorandum of understanding that we worked out? And would you draft a property settlement agreement and do an uncontested divorce? And I said, well, of course. And, you know, I told him that it should not cost more than, I don't remember how much, but it was really very reasonable. And, of course, then he called me back and he said, well, my wife wants to wait for about 8 months before I file the divorce because she's covered under my medical insurance. So I've agreed to do that. And so they waited. And when he finally came to see me, I put together the property settlement agreement, sent it to the wife's attorney, and didn't hear anything, followed up on it, and finally found out that the wife had no intention of following what they had agreed to in mediation. And of course, there's nothing that my client can do about it, because she never signed the mediation agreement. In other words, they agreed, they put it in writing, but it was never signed. And so he's really, you know, on the short end of the stick, only because he relied on what she said and, but didn't have anything signed. And one of the problems with most mediators is they will do a memorandum of understanding, but they will not have the client sign it for whatever reason, and I'm not sure exactly what. And in this case, the couple had also agreed to use a specific date to cut off equitable distribution. And that was important because my client had continued 401k contributions after that. And of course, again, that wasn't signed. So, you know, we're back to square one. And of course, I have a very angry young man as a client, and I understand that.
You know, it's hard to deal with those things because so much of what